He suspected he'd found another supply of drink, since she stood on the end of the jetty, and emptied his last three bottles of scotch into the Qualheim. Where was Jesus born, Horst? Where did he die for our mortal sins? Oh, very good, yes, very good indeed. I could train you up as a lay preacher in no time if you'd let me. I have a field to tend. I have chickens and a goat to feed. I have Jay to look after. What are we going to do about the Ivets? Let he who has not sinned cast the first stone. Horst! I'm sorry. He looked mournfully at the cross she was holding. Ruth thrust it into his hand. I don't want them living here. Hell, have you seen the way that little Jason Laws trots around after Quindexter? He's like a puppy on a leash. How many of us stopped by to look after Rachel and Jason? Oh, we were all such fine neighbors to her for the first week after Gwyn died, 10 days even. But now, to keep on for weeks without end, when you have your own family to nurture. People can't do it. They lack the tenacity. Of course they designate the Ivets to help Rachel. Something is done, and conscience is saved. But I attach no blame for that. This place drains us, Ruth. It turns us inwards. We only have time for ourselves. Ruth hit back on what she had heard about Rachel and Quinn Dexter. Hell, poor Gwyn had only been gone 5 weeks. Couldn't the damn woman wait a little longer? Where is it going to stop, Horst? Who's next? Do you know what I dream about? I dream of Jay running round after that super macho Jackson Gale, or Lawrence Dillon with his pretty face and his dead smile. That's what I dream. Are you going to tell me I have nothing to worry about, that I'm just paranoid? 6 deaths in 5 weeks, 6 accidents in 5 weeks. We have to do something. I know. Horse jabbed Judy Hoffman's cross into the ground. Water oozed up around the edge of the wood. Like blood, he thought. Filthy blood. The jungle steamed softly. It had rained less than an hour ago, and every trunk and leaf was still slick with water. One thick stratum of swan-white mist had formed at waist height. It meant the four Ivets, tramping down the animal track, could barely see their feet. Fingers of sunlight, probing down through the screen of overhead leaves, shone out like solid strands of gold in the ultra-humid air. Away in the distance was the tremulous gobbling and cooing of the birds, the chorus they had long since learnt to filter out. The ground here was rough, distorted by meandering hummocks twice the height of a man. Trees grew out of their sides at slapdash angles, curving upwards, supported by vast buttress roots. Their ash-grey trunks were slender in relation to their height, seldom more than 30 centimetres wide, yet they were all over 20 metres high, crowned by interlaced umbrellas of emerald foliage. Nothing grew on the trunks below. Even the vines and scrub plants around the triangular roots lacked their usual vigour. "There's no game here," Scott Williams said after half an hour of scrambling over interminable hummocks and splashing through the water that pooled around them. "It's the wrong sort of country." "That's right," Quinn Dexter said. "No reason for anyone to come this way." They had started out early that morning, marching down the well-worn path towards the Savannah homesteads to the south of Aberdale, a legitimate hunting party with 4 borrowed laser rifles and 1 electromagnetic rifle. Quinn had led them straight down the path for 5 kilometres, then broke off into the jungle towards the west. He made 1 sweep each week, the Guido block he had taken from the Hoffman's homestead, making sure a different area was searched each time. They had done well from the Hoffmans that night a fortnight ago. Donnie had come to Lalonde well prepared for the rigours of pioneering life. There had been freeze-dried food, tools, medical supplies, several rifles, and 2 Jovian Bank credit discs. The 6 Ivets he had led on the nighttime mission to the homestead had feasted well before he turned them loose on Judy and the 2 children. That had been the first time Quinn had conducted the full ceremony, the dark mass of dedication to God's brother, binding the others to him with the shared corruption. Before that, it had been fear which made them obey. Now he owned their souls. 2 of them had been the weakest of the Ivet group, Eily and Scott, disbelievers, until lovely Angie was offered to them. The serpent beast had awoken in each of them, as it always did, inflamed by the heat and chanting, an orange torchlight shining on naked skin. God's brother had whispered into their hearts and shown them the true way of the flesh, the animal way.